Come here, come in, shut the door. Alright, good. And Liat, the hand has an announcement to make. Okay, Liat, go.
So whoever ordered suits with me, can you please come get them? I can't keep them in my locker anymore. So they're all up here.
Okay, good. We will finish up. The last person must close the door, please. Okay. Great. Okay, thanks. Okay, good. Now, let's go and finish up the knee joint. And as you may remember that we had done, you know, the initial part of the knee joint, and where we were looking at the capsule of the knee joint. And so let me see, do you want to do the cyclic or the knee joint? I think we'll do the knee joint. Okay, so that's where I feel more comfortable at this time. Component of the knee joint, femoral boundaries, okay, those we have done. Now, the fibrous capsule. That is where we were going to go, the fibrous capsule. As you look at the fibrous capsule of the knee joint, you would note that it is really very nice posteriorly, but in some places, like anteriorly, it is not completely, you know, covering some of the structures. So let me put this diagram on. I gave you a copy of this for coloring. And so let's look at this here. Okay, so here, this is the posterior aspect of the knee joint. That means the fibrous capsule of the knee joint posteriorly. We will look at this little bit of, not a whole lot of details. We will look at few details of the fibrous capsule, just enough so you understand if you get an injured knee, when you are looking at a person's injured knee, where are the structures, what are you palpating, what are you feeling, you know, so just to get, you know, enough of that type of information. As you look at it here, so here I have black and blue and let me see, purple and green colors here. And so here we have, this is the lateral side. As you see, the head of the fibula right over here. So that's the lateral side and posterior. And so here, of course, you know, you have the lateral femoral condyle is coming down, medial femoral condyle, so here is the femur. And so what area of the femur is this here that I'm kind of circling with my pen here? What area would you call that? The popliteal surface of the knee joint. The popliteal surface, you know, right here, as you look at it, popliteal surface. Okay, so why am I writing this word down, the popliteal surface? Because the popliteal surface and the popliteal fossa are two different things. You need to be able to differentiate. The popliteal surface is on the bone, on the femur. Popliteal surface of the femur is on the bone femur, okay? Popliteal fossa is something we will finish toward the end of this class, okay? And so there, and so here you have an idea as to where you are at. So by the time I get my, you know, images, let's go and look at the fibrous capsule posteriorly. As you look at the, here it is attaching to the areas around. So posteriorly, postural superiorly, see here, this is superior because this is inferior. It is, you know, inserting into the intercondylar area. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Brian. Okay, we will still acknowledge the help we get, even though it's not every day. And so. Okay, now, so here, someplace here, okay, now let me go to the No, no, I'm not going to go there. Okay, good. Hey, I think I clapped too fast. Okay, good. New join. Good. Okay, here comes the new join. And here we are. Alright, so here, this is the same diagram that we are coloring right now as you look at it. And so let me take you through this quickly and then color and be done with it, and then we can move on to the other, you know, structures right over here. Lateral, medial, and so here you can see the attachment. Here is the popliteal surface of the femur, and so look at it here. So here is the attachment of the fibrous capsule posteriorly. That means posterior, posterior, superior, right here. Now, when you come down to the lower part, inferior part here, onto the tibia, also there is attachment here, but you note that there is an opening in the fibrous capsule posteriorly because there's a muscle coming out, from within, you know, the fibrous capsule. So here, you know, you have the attachment of, you know, the of the fibrous capsule here. And in red color here, you have the popliteus muscle. So here is the popliteus muscle coming out. That means there's a gap here, isn't it? In the fibrous capsule. But so here, the popliteus muscle is coming like that. So here is the popliteus muscle coming. And then, of course, because of this muscle, you know, just coming out of the fibrous capsule, there are, you know, what you call the ligaments and tendons reinforcing wherever the fibrous capsule is missing. So in green color, I have one of the tendons coming from the head of the fibula. Here it is fusing right over onto the fibrous capsule, supporting the fibrous capsule. And so this is like an arc. So this is the arcuate popliteal, you know, ligament. And the arcuate, you know, ligament right over here, and part of it goes up like that, fuses with the fibrous capsule. Then there's another one coming medially in blue color, and coming immediately, here is the semi membranosus. Remember the posterior attachment of the semi membranosus muscle? So here is the tendon of the semi membranosus posteriorly. And some, you know, fibers here like that, from that semi membranosus tendon, you have some muscles coming over, expanding right over on, see how far it's going, reinforcing the fibrous capsule posteriorly like that. Okay? And so when you look at the fibrous capsule, then we don't have to worry about the gap that it has because of the popliteus muscle, you know, exiting from within, you know, the fibrous, you know, capsule. Okay, so that is, you know, posterior, and then posteriorly, superiorly it is completely attached, inferiorly it is attached to, you know, the tibia here, but one part is there. So that is the posterior part of the fibrous capsule. And then when we look at the fibrous capsule here, anteriorly, you can figure that out easily because of the patella being here. Anteriorly, it is not complete. The fibrous capsule is anteriorly not complete in front. As you would note here, let's take a look at it here. Here you have the patella. Right over here is the patella, you know, the quadriceps, you know, tendon here, the patellar ligament here, but deep to it here, the fibrous capsule is not complete. That means, that is why the textbook says it's deficient. It's deficient. Anteriorly, it is deficient. The fibrous capsule of the knee joint is anteriorly deficient. Okay, it's not complete. It's angularly deficient. When you look at it here, you may see that this is from Nader. This diagram is, you know, from Nader. As you see, patella, you know, is sitting right over here. And what do you see here? You can see this red thing that you see here. This red that you see here. That is your synovial membrane. That is your synovial membrane lining. But what happens to the fibrous capsule anteriorly? That means it attaches, anteriorly comes and attaches to the, around the articular, you know, areas. Articular areas, that means when you look at this here, the, so here, as we have the knee joint, when you look at it here, it comes and it inserts right around, you know, the articular surface here, right around the articular surface here, and also on this side. But right here in front, anteriorly, it is deficient. It's not there because the patella is sitting there, okay? And so, but what happens as we look at it, you know, it is, our knees are very functional. We are all walking around with the, you know, and weight bearing and going on. There are five ligaments that are supporting the anterior part of the fibrous capsule. So right over here, as you look at it, ligaments supporting the fibrous capsule anteriorly. So you don't even have to write it down, all five of them, or the structures that are supporting the fibrous capsule anteriorly are listed there, and it's a good idea for you to know where which ligament is, you know, coming or going. Again, this is not for memorizing, this is for understanding how the knee joint, you know, is functioning normally or can function normally. And one of them is the patellar ligament. As you look at patella, patellar ligament, and pubular collateral ligament. There are two collateral ligaments. There are two collateral ligaments for the knee joint. Collateral, just like the collaterals we put in the banks, you know, for borrowing money. Just like that. Here we have collateral ligaments. So here, you know, we have a lateral collateral ligament. Part of it is cut. Well, that's the biceps, you know, tendon. But the, here is the iliotibial tract. So the lateral collateral ligament also is on the left side. And the medial collateral, let me see, this one is not for the ligament, but I have both of them here. As we look at the collaterals here, look at those. Here we have also on the diagram that, yeah, so here you can see the collaterals very clearly. And here you can see the fibular collateral ligament. Here you have the tibial, you know, collateral ligament. So both of them also, you know, give reinforcement. Okay, tibial collateral and oblique popliteal, arcuate popliteal, and so those are the ligaments, five of them. Can you see some of them here? Yes, both collaterals can be seen on this diagram right here. The one we were coloring right here. Here you can see the tibial collateral is on the medial side, that means in purple color. So right here. So here is the fibular collateral or lateral collateral. And then here is the tibial collateral or the medial collateral. So here, you know, the medial is, you know, talked about, you know, there, because the other one is not just sitting, you know, that close, because we will talk about, when we talk about the collaterals, we will spend a little bit more time, you know, talking about, you know, the collaterals, cruciates, you know, menisci. We will talk about those, you know, separately as we come along. And so, all these are the five ligaments that are supporting the fibrous capsule anteriorly, some of them posteriorly, and on the side. So That's the part of the fibrous capsule. And then, would we have any synovial joints? When you have the fibrous capsule, what other capsule or what other membrane would you have there? Synovial membrane. The synovial membrane, some places will be called the synovial capsule. It's the same. Synovial membrane, synovial capsule is the same. Okay. So the same thing is happening with the synovial, you know, membrane or the synovial capsule, because what's happening is, again, which is the synovial membrane, which is the synovial capsule. So the same thing, membrane capsule, as you look at it, you can see the synovial membrane or the synovial capsule as it is going around. But there's a very nice diagram here and a very nice diagram in your textbook that also shows what the synovial membrane is doing, because the synovial membrane of the knee joint is little different in its, how it is, you know, structured in the joint, you know, a little different from that of the hip joint, okay. In that, what do you see there? That is, because the function of the synovial membrane is, you know, of course to secrete synovial fluid, but the other thing it does is it lines the fibrous capsule. The synovial membrane lines the fibrous capsule, okay? And so when the fibrous capsule is deficient anteriorly, what the synovial membrane does is it, you know, does, it can't line, there's no fibrous capsule anteriorly. So what does it do? It does like this. This is from your textbook. Let me see. I don't exactly remember, you know, the page number, you know, fifth edition. Let me see. I may have the page number written down of the synovial membrane. The same diagram, only small. You know, in the reading pages, you would find the same diagram. And Grant's Atlas. Grant's Atlas also has that. Not Grant's Dissector may not have. Grant's Atlas has the same diagram. So here, you can really see, I'm going to follow this diagram with you. This is the synovial membrane injected with, you know, some latex, some dye or something like that, you know, to blow it up. And so here is the quadriceps muscle coming down. Here you have the patella. So, and so here, as you look at it here, here is the patella is right here, so you have an idea where you are at. And so here is your femur is right here. Here, okay. Okay, right here, that's the bone, lower end of the femur, right here. And so here, the synovial membrane comes. And since there is no fibrous capsule going up here, you know, deep to the patella, the synovial membrane rises up, you know, comes right up under the quadriceps tendon and the lower end of the femur. So it's in between, it rises up in between the quadriceps tendon and the lower end of the what is called your femur right here. So there you have it forms a bursa. There it forms a bursa right here, as you see it. Here is the femur. You know, so the sagittal section, so you see the femur, the patella, and the subcutaneous patella bursa, and the quadriceps tendon right here, and some fat, but this is here, this one here is what you see here in this big whole thing, you know, is the supra patella bursa. It's an important bursa for two things. Number one, it has communication with the joint cavity. That means the entire, you know, synovial capsule, the entire synovial membrane. So any fluid that is in there, you know, is continuous into the suprapatellar bursa. The suprapatellar bursa is second importance of that is it allows full extension and flexion of the knee joint, the full extension and flexion of the knee joint. What are the two main functions of the knee joint? Flexion and extension. So the two main functions of the knee joint is facilitated. That means this allows full extension and, you know, flexion of the knee joint. So in other words, if you have excess fluid filled up in the suprapatellar bursa, it's going to affect, you know, your movement, isn't it? It's going to affect, you know, the flexion and extension of the knee joint. Yesterday you were looking at the goniometer, I mean, you were using the goniometer to measure, you know, the angle of the knee joint or hip joint or whatever. And so if somebody has excess fluid filled up in the suprapatellar bursa, they're not going to be able to flex fully or extend, you know, fully extension. Both of them, you know, will be affected there, and so you can measure and figure out. So that is one. And then what else happens with the synovial membrane? The other thing that happens with the synovial membrane is this. The synovial membrane extends upward like that, goes up like that, and then it comes down, and it wants to come down and go, you know, into the entire joint cavity. But what does it find? When it comes down, so there is a fat pad here. There is fat pad infrapatellar fat pad. There's a fat pad sitting here, and so because of that fat pad, so here, you can see the fat pad here? Right over here, see the fat pad? Because of this fat pad, it cannot go, you know, right, you know, all over as it wants. So what the synovial membrane does is, it's like this. Now the synovial membrane has extended right up to here, where I'm touching here, right up to there, and now it has come down. There's a fat pad here, so it can't go down here, and the fibrous capsule has terminated here. So it comes to go to the sides, and it forms like two branches, two ala, like two wings. It forms two wings, but it cannot go posteriorly, can't come all the way posteriorly straight through the joint. Why can't it go straight through the joint all the way to the back? What's stopping it? The cruciates. The cruciate ligaments are inside. The cruciate ligaments are here. Cruciates crossing, you know, going from the front to the back and back to the front. There are two cruciate ligaments sitting in the knee joint. The cruciates, you know, the two cruciate ligaments are sitting inside the knee joint. Because of the cruciates, it's not able to go down. So because it can't go down, what does it do? It goes to the side of the cruciate ligaments and forming what you see here. What you see here is these two ala. When you look at the knee joint, if you are looking at the textbook or the atlas, you would find this like this. This two ala. Some of you may remember in your grandparents' homes, if you have seen these cushions, it has a back and then it has like two, you know, like legs, like that. You know, you can put it in a big chair and you can sit there, you know, like that. So this is the synovial membrane is like that. It's like that. It has that back support, you know, of that cushion, a cushion coming down like that, and it has two prongs like that, a big one. And so the synovial membrane is more or less like that. So it comes down and it then, you know, forms an ala or like a little, you know, cushion here. Okay? And so then you still can't go all the way because, you know, you have the, what is called the cruciate ligaments inside. The cruciate ligaments are inside. So what happens is it goes around the cru- cruciate ligaments right here. Okay, as you look at this going around the cruciates here, let's take a look at where you have the. So here we have the cruciate ligaments cut off, but here's the posterior part of the knee joint, the anterior part of the knee joint. That means this is the tibial plateau on which you have the menisci, lateral and medial. And so here you can see the posterior cruciate coming, the anterior cruciate coming, and here you would see this red line as coming here. You see here? It surrounds the cruciate ligaments. So this is why this is a good classical question that anybody can ask you, that the cruciate ligaments are inside the fibrous capsule, which is true, it is, but outside the synovial membrane, that is also true. It's outside the synovial membrane. So the cruciates are outside. So if somebody put a clinical question on a body exam and asks you that there is an infection, you know, in the knee joint cavity or in the synovial cavity, and, you know, which of the following structures can be affected by, you know, this infection, direct, you know, effect of that infection. And if they have cruciates and they have what you call menisci and they have all kinds of, you know, structures, and the cruciates will be the least affected, because you can see here is the synovial cavity. Here is the synovial cavity, because that synovial membrane is, you know, going right around. And so here you can see it is not inside. So the cruciate ligaments are inside the fibrous capsule and within the joint space, joint cavity, but outside the synovial membrane or the synovial capsule. That is clinically important for you to keep in mind. That is because of this, you know, structural thing, the fat pad being there, and also we have, you know, the menisci are sitting there. Here you can see the meniscus is sitting right there. So it goes around. Goes around, attaches to it, but goes around. And it comes to the posterior aspect. When it comes to the posterior aspect, you have the two condyles of what will it find. When it comes, when these two ala, two prongs of your grandmother's cushion, when it comes to the posterior aspect of the knee joint, what two condyles am I talking about? Femoral or tibial? Femoral, these two condyles. So it comes under these two condyles. The two condyles there, and snoops up there. Comes right, you know, right up there, like a bag here and like a bag there. And what muscle has attachment to this part of the femur? What muscles have attachment to this part of the femur? Gastrocnemius, that's great. Lateral and medial heads of the gastrocnemius. So the lateral and medial heads of the gastrocnemius. And so here, as you look at it here, you can see. So here, see the. So here you may see this subtendons, bursa, medial, that bursa that you see, this is the origin, you know, of your medial head of the gastrocnemius, the lateral head of the gastrocnemius, okay, right here. And so here you can see part of that, what you see here, this and this, that's part of that synovial membrane that is coming, you know, there and protecting, you know, this tendon, as the tendon has taken origin from, you know, the lateral and the medial condyles of the femur, and, you know, it will be coming down, you know, here. And so that is, you know, so that means they are also forming bursae here. They're forming bursae here. As you look at it here, you can see that bulge. You see that bulge there? This bulge? That is continuation or continuity of that, you know, the synovial membrane. That bulge that you see here is the same bulge that you're seeing under these two heads, because here's the gastrocnemius lateral head, and here is the medial head and the lateral heads. And so that is how, so now you have seen so much about the synovial membrane. That means how some of the, what is called your bursae, are in communication with the joint cavity, how some of them are not. As you look at this one, suprapatellar bursa, definitely, you know, is in communication with, or it communicates with, you know, the knee joint, you know, cavity, you know, right there. And we will go over the bursae as we come along after doing the synovial, you know, membrane. You know, we will go and also do the other structures, the cruciates and the collatos and all those things, you know, we will also, you know, go over. So let me go here. Did he have a test for biochemistry or something? No? Did you have a biochemistry test or something today? No? Then how come you are all so quiet? So I thought I thought you had to study for biochemistry test, and so then that means you are tired from, you know, studying. But so you don't have any excuse. What excuse do you have for not knowing the cruciates are there and all these things? Give me some excuse. And so I feel happy that you are looking at some of these things. Attachment to the patella, that means how is the synovial membrane attached to the patella. It comes and it attaches to the area around the patella. The patella is sitting, you know, in front of the femur. And then relationship to the cruciate ligaments. You know, the cruciate ligaments, you know, are surrounded by the synovial membrane, and that is its relationship to the popliteus muscle. And how is it related to the popliteus muscle? It goes under the origin, that right up to as far as it can go to the origin of the popliteus muscle. As the popliteus muscle takes origin from where, because knee joint was a required reading, so from where does the popliteus muscle take origin? Lateral condyle, that's right, lateral condyle of the femur. Lateral condyle of the femur. So here you can see that. See, here is the head of the fibula. The lateral condyle, this is epicondyle here, so it is coming from within. It's coming from within, so it's taking origin from the lateral condyle of the femur. And as it is taking origin from the lateral condyle of the femur, you know, the synovial membrane also has, you know, a pad of, like a bursa, right under. Alex, you have a question? Okay. And so, relationship with popliteus, that means right under. I will not do the popliteus muscle here. Sometimes I do. Today, I will not do the popliteus muscle here. That is the origin and innervation of the popliteus muscle, which we will do with, you know, the deep muscles. Deep muscles, we will do it. We'll do it, you know, at that time. And so this I'm not doing right here. How is the popliteal muscle attached to the knee joint? Okay, so that you've seen, its origin from here and its insertion is right here, you know, to the medial aspect of the upper, you know, part of the tibia. Intra-articular ligaments. What ligaments do you think I'm referring to? Intra-articular ligaments of the knee joint. Intra-articular ligaments of the knee joint. What ligaments do you think we are going to do now? What are the intra-articular ligaments? Yeah, the anterior cruciate ligament, the posterior cruciate ligaments, both of those ligaments are within the joint, intra-articular. So as you look at it, if somebody tells you the intra-articular ligaments are damaged, the intra-articular ligaments of the knee joint are damaged for some reason. Normally it doesn't happen, but in this case it has happened. So then immediately you should think of what are these intra-articular ligaments. Number one, your anterior cruciate ligament. Number two, your posterior cruciate ligament. And I'm sure most of you or all of you have heard about the cruciate, haven't you? The torn ligaments, the torn cruciates, the torn, you know, something else. And so here we are, anterior cruciate ligament and function location course, posterior cruciate ligament, function location course, as you're looking at it. This is the posterior aspect of the knee joint. You're looking into the knee joint from above. That means you've removed the femur already. So this is this. We have the tibial plateau. And as you look at it, the anterior cruciate ligament and the posterior cruciate ligaments taking origin. Very easy. Not memorizing. Look at it. From where is it taking origin? Here, this is one of the origins. That means anterior cruciate. This is posterior cruciate. Now let's look at it here. As you look at the two cruciates here, here you can see anterior cruciate taking origin from where? Posterior, taking origin from where? What would be an easy answer? From where are they taking origin? Are they taking origin from the femur or the tibia? Tibia. What part of the tibia? Intercondylar. Remember the tibial condyles? So here you have the intercondylar area. Anterior is about here. There's a little place there. You can actually feel, you know, when you put the finger there, you can actually feel intercondylar, you know, area of the tibia anteriorly, posterior intercondylar area. Just very easy when you look at the tibia right here. So it's taking origin from there. And the other is the location. We'll come to the function and the course. Location, you have seen the course. Very easy way of saying the anterior cruciate, the course is up, backward, and lateral. Up, backward, and lateral. So you can figure out whichever university you prefer to make that short form with. Up, backward, and lateral. That means it takes origin from the anterior intercondylar area of the tibia, travels up, backward, and lateral. What lateral am I talking about? It's attachment. So what would you have? What do you think it is attaching to? What do you think it is attaching to when you when these ligaments, when it comes, anterior cruciate ligament, when it comes, taking origin from here, from the anterior part here, travels up, backwards, and lateral. What lateral thing is logically there to which it will attach? The condyle of the femur, lateral condyle of the femur. So this is naturally the lateral condyle of the femur that I have here is the lateral condyle of the femur. So it attaches to the lateral condyle of the femur right in here, inside the joint. Okay? And so, what's the function of it? Anterior cruciate ligament. Classical information. What you need to know these things because you will get more often than not. You know, anterior cruciates, medial meniscus, you know, all these getting damaged. Football players, any sports injury, a lot of them. So what is the function, normal function of the anterior cruciate ligament? It prevents posterior displacement of the femur on tibia. Posterior displacement of the femur on tibia. That means it prevents hyperextension. So the anterior cruciate ligament, you know, ligament prevents hyperextension of the knee. Okay? And then we look at the posterior cruciate ligament. Everything is the same, taking origin from the posterior intercondylar surface and traveling up forward and medial. U of M, University of Miami, University of Manitoba. You know, so U of M, University of whichever M, University of Maine. And so up, forward and medial. That means up. So it's taking Vardhini from here, traveling up, you know, and, you know, medial, isn't it? Up, U of M, medial. You know, so up, forward, and medial. So attaching to the medial condyle of the femur, of the femur. So what do you think normally this the posterior cruciate ligament is doing? What will be the normal function of the posterior cruciate ligament? Just the opposite of the anterior cruciate ligament. Logic. Just the opposite. So if it's the opposite, what will it be preventing? Hyperflexion of the knee joint, and also what will it be doing with the femur, if you are saying prevents forward displacement of the femur. So those are the two cruciate, you know, ligaments. And let's move on. Yeah, good. To the articular discs, menisci, or semilunar cartilages. So these, the articular discs or semilunar, you know, cartilages and menisci, these are the same. All three names, these are referred to as, you know, any of these. Okay, so as you look at it here, you can see the lateral meniscus, the medial meniscus. And so here the, or the lateral articular disc and the medial articular disc, as you look at it here. And where are they sitting? Sitting right on where? Where are they sitting? Tibial plateau, on the tibial plateau. And on the tibial plateau. But the tibial plateau, you know, is just a bone. So do you think it will be just sitting on the bone without anything? How do you think it's sitting there? How does anything sit, you know, to the bone? What happened? It's attached to the bone. So here you can see it's attached to the bone here, to the tibial plateau. Right here you have attachment, right here you have attachment, right here you have attachment, right here you have attachment. So it's a relationship to, and or it's attachment to surrounding, you know, structures. It's attached to the tibial plateau. Okay, it's attached to the tibial plateau. So they don't jump up and down, and they don't go. When you jump or when you turn around or do something, you know, it's not going anywhere, sitting on the tibial, you know, plateau. And both of them, the attachment to the surrounding structures of the medial and the lateral meniscus, the medial menisci plural, are very important for a clinician to know. Number one, because you will get injured knees. Number two, physical clinical medicine. Number three, whenever you are palpating, you know, the knee joint, you really need to know the attachment of, or the attachments, plural, of these discs to surrounding structures. Okay, so let's take a look at, you know, the attachments to, you know, the surrounding structures. And this red line here, what is this red line here? This red line that is going around here, what is this? The synovial membrane, the synovial capsule. So as you look at it, so here, on the lateral side here, you have the popliteus tendon. And here is the fibular collateral ligament. And you may remember this from here, as you look at this diagram, the one that we have looked at first here, and okay, cool, good. Here, okay, so look at it here. Here you have the lateral collateral ligament, the medial collateral ligament, okay? So here we have the lateral collateral ligament and the medial collateral ligament. And here you see the same, the lateral collateral ligament. And so here you have the medial collateral ligament. And this is the medial meniscus. And look at the attachments of the medial meniscus to the surrounding structures. And so you have told me that this is the synovial capsule. So the medial meniscus, is it attached to the synovial capsule? Yes or no? Yes. It is attached to the synovial membrane. And then what's the other structure here? What's the other structure here? Tibial collateral ligament. So it's attached to the tibial collateral ligament, you know, also. So when you look at the anterior cruciate ligament, it is its attachment, you know, to the surrounding structures as you look at it here. And so it is attached. I mean, the meniscus as well as the lateral collateral, the medial collateral ligament, they are attached. On the medial side, there is attachment here. When you look on the lateral side, is the lateral meniscus attached to the fibular collateral or the lateral collateral ligament? Is it attached? No, it's not attached. Okay? And then, what is it attached to? What is it attached to? This, you know, the lateral meniscus, what is it attached to here? You see the popliteal tendon, and what is the red line, did you say? It's the synovial membrane. Synovial membrane, popliteal tendon, is attached to the synovial membrane and the popliteal tendon. But it's not attached to the fibular collateral ligament. Because the fibular collateral ligament here, right here, when you look at the fibular collateral ligament, it is not attached to it. So why am I spending time here? What do you think is the significance of the lateral meniscus and the medial meniscus, you know, one having more attachment, that means to the medial meniscus having attachment to the synovial membrane, to the medial collateral ligament, and also to the fibrous capsule. Here is the fibrous capsule, okay? To the fibrous capsule. So, its medial meniscus is attached to all these, all three structures here. The medial collateral ligament, the synovial membrane, and the fibrous capsule. On the other hand, when you look at the lateral collateral ligament, it's also attached to everything, synovial membrane, and it's attached to synovial membrane, and what is the other thing it's attached to here? What is this here? Popliteus tendon. So it's attached to the popliteus tendon. And it's not attached to the fibular collateral ligament. What do you think is the significance of these attachments? Why do you think I'm spending time on this? What do you think is the significance of this attachment? This one has attachment, this one doesn't have attachment. Well, damage. That means because of the attachment of the medial meniscus to the surrounding structures here, it's not able to accommodate sudden position change. It's not able to accommodate sudden position change because it's tied down. It's like marriage. You're married, you're tied down. You can't, you know, up and go. You know, you can't just pack your suitcase and go because, you know, that's not nice, you know. So, you don't do that. So that means that is why the medial meniscus gets damaged more often than the lateral meniscus. Because the lateral meniscus here, you can see, it doesn't have attachment to the fibular collateral ligament. And so it is able to shift. And also, when you get hit, something happens, the force of that hit is coming from the outside more often than from the inside. You know, any impact that, you know, it's on the knee joint, it's from the outside. And so when it comes from the outside, and so that the medial, you know, meniscus, because of its attachment, it can't move. It can move away, you know. And so also, you know, so the shift, you know, can't take place. That is why more often than not, the medial meniscus is damaged. And so now you know the anatomical basis of the medial meniscus getting damaged more often than the lateral. Because the common sense will tell you, lateral is on the side and so it should be the lateral meniscus. And the force is coming from the lateral side more often, so it should be the lateral meniscus. That's what you would think. but that's not the case. When the force comes, you know, it can move because it's not attached to the fibular collateral ligament. But the force, the other one can't move. And that's why you would hear more often that the anterior cruciate ligament, the medial meniscus, are torn together or damaged together, because here, you know, this one is not, you know, but moving, and so the force will also, you know, interfere with this one. So the medial meniscus, the what is called your anterior cruciate ligament, and from this diagram, that involvement of the anterior cruciate ligament is difficult for you to figure out. But if you look at this one, you would agree here, the medial meniscus is sitting here. And so here you have the anterior cruciate ligament. And so that's the posterior, but here is the anterior cruciate coming. And so that you can see. And so these three structures, you know, can damage together. The anterior cruciate and the medial meniscus, and it can also involve, you know, the medial collateral, you know, ligament. It can also involve, you know, the medial, you know, collateral, you know, ligament. And so that is why whenever you examine a damaged or an injured knee, you should examine the menisci. That means the discs. So the articular discs. Okay. So the same thing, lateral and medial collateral ligaments, we went around, you know, talking about where they are located, what they are doing, and so we covered them, you know, together. And ligaments associated with the menisci, I have pointed them out, like there are small ligaments. You have seen the attachment of the menisci, how they are sitting. When you look at the menisci here, you can see how they are sitting, you know, their attachment, you looked at it. These are the ligaments that I'm referring to here. These little things, this one, this one, this one, this one, are the coronary ligaments. And the transverse ligament here is connecting transverse ligament of the knee here. Very thin sometimes. And it may not be present in everyone, but it has a function. It has a function. It allows the two menisci to move, you know, in unison, like together. You know, they are not going, you know, separate. That's what the transverse ligament does. I will not worry too much about the posterior meniscofemoral. I have it there in case you think the meniscus and the femur are connected with a posterior meniscofemoral ligament, anterior meniscofemoral ligament. I don't pay too much attention to it, and I just mention it and I move, but I mention it because it is there, and if you see it, because it's a structure that you see here, the posterior meniscofemoral ligament. That's actually part of this meniscofemoral ligaments are part of your anterior and posterior cruciate ligaments. They're part of these anterior and posterior cruciate ligaments. But you can see, they stand out separate, and somebody may wonder why they are. And so this I have answered. And where they are associated with the knee joint are the next things. There are several bursae associated with the knee joint. How many do you think there are? The bursae associated with the knee joint, how many bursae do you think we have? About 12 to 15 bursae are associated with the knee joint. And we're not going to be looking at all the bursae, but what are important bursae? Those that have those that have continuity with the knee joint. As you look at this one here, you can see some of them here, because there are so many tendons, you know, that are coming and inserting and taking origin. As you look at, you know, these here, you can see on the lateral side, you can see right under each of these, you know, tendons, that you have a what do you call a birth, But so you can look at those birthday in the atlas. But which birthday communicate with the knee joint? That is what is important for a physician to know. Which birthday communicate with the knee joint, and what is the reason for the physician to know which birthday are communicating with the joint cavity? What's the reason? Infection. If there's an infection in any of these birthday, then it can also, you know, go into the joint cavity. So which are these birthday? Suprapatella, okay, you've seen the suprapatella, and anything else? Suprapatellar, anything else? Not infrapatellar. Suprapatellar, and the suprapatellar bursa, I also have mentioned the function of the suprapatellar bursa. You may remember a few minutes ago. Yeah, allows full flexion and extension of the knee joint, you know, the suprapatellar bursa. And what are the other bursae that do you think that communicate with the joint cavity, the knee joint? Popliteal, the bursa under the popliteus muscle, okay, popliteus, it should be popliteus, okay, popliteus bursa. And when you say popliteal, that means it's pertaining to the popliteal surface or the popliteal fossa, okay. This is popliteus, that means the muscle, the popliteus, and anything else? Medial gastrocnemius. And also you have the pes anserine, semimembranosus, you know, pes anserine bursa, not all pes anserine, because there are three or four pes anserine bursae. Only one of them, the semimembranosus one. So there's four of them, suprapatellar, and the medial gastrocnemius, you know, bursa, popliteus, and you know the pes anserine, only the semi membranosus part of the pes anserine bursa. And I've gone over, you know, the function of this, and that means the next is blood supply to the knee joint. Before coming to the blood supply to the knee joint, you may need to take a break, and so that you can breathe fresh air and, you know, get the questions and things like that. And so, good. Oh, I forgot. Before you go, I like to suggest something to the class. That is, the final exam is worth 40%. The midterm exam is worth 30%. So I have a suggestion. That is, take the 5% from the final and give you a case study. I can give you the case study now. That means, you know, this week I can give you the case study. Three people can work on the case study. And that's worth 5%. It's not a very difficult case study. It is something that we have already dealt with in the class. And, you know, on the lower extremity, because we are dealing with the lower extremity. And I want three people to work on it. And I will set all the conditions. And I would pass a sheet around. If you don't want the case study, then you have to sign. So the majority always, you know, rules. You know that. And the minority will be heard. And so therefore, I have the sign-up sheet. If the majority of the class wants to do a case study for 5%, then you sign, you know, this side of a page. And I have three pages here, so I have you at four and no, like that. And please, you know, sign. And so if the majority wants, you know, I can distribute a case study, put it online, or bring it to class, one of the two. And then I set the conditions, like how many days and, you know, how many pages and those things. So, there you are. Okay. See you in a few minutes. And so, I said to my membranosus. Okay. All right. Okay, guys. Okay, if we just go like this, we can just finish the knee joint comfortably. And then you have all the time to review that. Turn off the overhead. Yeah, but I need to use them to show things. When I'm not using it. Oh, you mean the ceiling light. Turn off the ceiling light. I didn't ask for it. Oh, two things you can do. Wait. Come here, please. Katie. Two things. Those people who are sitting there, you know that the white things, the white slime, we can pull up those a little bit and turn the ceiling lights off. Okay? That way people have enough light to write. Okay. And those of you who are sitting on the sides of the classroom, please, pull up that little bit so you have more light. Yeah, a little bit more. And okay, can you still see? Yes or no? Yeah. And the signer sheet is passing along. Please sign so I can get copies for you or. This thing, you need help? Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's good enough, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. So you have all enough lights. You agree with her decision. All right. But now, all right. Okay, good. Katie Fitzpatrick, that was... agreeable to everyone. That is good. Okay. Blood supply to the knee joint. What would be a quick reply? Blood supply to the knee joint. What would you tell me? Blood supply to the knee joint. How? From the genicular anastomosis. Okay. From the genicular anastomosis. And then innervation of the knee joint. And you can look that up in the textbook. And let me, movements permitted at the knee joint. Many a times people make a mistake on the movements of the, when I ask people for the main movement of the knee joint, they will write everything that comes to their mind. Okay? Gliding and sliding and medial rotation and lateral rotation. What are the main movements permitted at the knee joint?
Flexion
and extension are the two main movements. You know, gliding and rotation take place during this move, flexion and extension, because of the difference, you know, of these condyles. The middle condyle is a little longer and, you know, those things. But gliding and sliding is there, but they are not the main movement. Okay? And main movements are flexion and extension. Flexion, what muscles produce the flexion? You should be able to tell me, or I'm going to move on. What muscles move the flexion of the knee joint? You should know that. I don't think I should press past it. Hamstrings, okay? How will the flexion stop? What will stop the movement of flexion movement of the knee joint? Flex your knee and see what will stop it. When it touches the calf. Okay? And what structures limit this movement? The calf muscles. Okay, now let's move on. Extension. What muscles produce extension? I don't think I have to even go what limits. You guys know that because you already wrote it. Gliding usually occurs during flexion and extension. Medial and lateral rotation of the knee joint, you can produce the medial and lateral rotation of the knee joint when you sit on the table and then you just hold your thigh like that, and then you can easily do the medial and the lateral rotation. Okay? Otherwise also you can do, but you can feel it when you do that. Now let me see. Dash and dash are the main movements permitted at the knee joint. I have already gone over that 10 times. Genicular anastomosis. What arteries participate in the formation of genicular anastomosis? It's very simple. Now pay attention. Don't waste your time on naming all these little vessels that you see here. I'm not asking you to do it. And if you do it at your own time, that's your choice. So here, I'd like you to know that the what is called the popliteal artery, the femoral artery, and your anterior tibial, posterior tibial. Take it from me, anterior tibial, posterior tibial. They have branches coming up. Because in textbook, one place it looks and they talk about only posterior tibial. And some place else they will talk about anterior tibial. So anterior tibial, posterior tibial. So if the anterior tibial and the posterior tibial are coming down, the vessels that are coming up from it is why you call it reoccurring, okay? So just branches off. And I don't even expect you to say recurrent, but branches of the anterior tibial, posterior tibial, and your popliteal and the femoral. And this one, you need to know because this one is your descending, you know, branch of the lateral femoral cutaneous. Look at it. It's coming all the way. It's a good piece of information. So you know, if you ligate something, you know, here, you can have blood coming down, you know, to the lower, you know, structures from that and take a, you know, look at that. And so that is about the genicular, you know, anastomosis and the arteries, you know, participating in the genicular anastomosis. And let's now, okay, so this part here is, we have just gone over this femoral, I know which arteries are participating, I've gone over that. And the popliteal fossa. So let's finish up the popliteal fossa and then I want to spend a little time with the clinical significances because knee joint gets involved in many, injuries and, you know, things like that. So let's look at the popliteal fossa right here. Okay. Popliteal fossa location, what would you say is the location of the popliteal fossa? Posterior to the knee joint. Posterior to the knee joint. And so that means as you look at this popliteal fossa here and its boundaries, let's look at, there's another, you know, yeah, here, the boundaries of it. Now in anatomy, when we talk about a fossa, when we talk about triangles, like in the neck, in the third quarter, we will talk about a lot of triangles. Whenever we have a space, a fossa, a space, we talk about its boundaries, we talk about its contents. So if somebody tells you that somebody had an injury, you know, in the popliteal fossa, all the structures were damaged except which of the following. So you need to know the contents. The reason is, you know, people can injure, you know, parts of the body and what structures. So you have to envision what structures are going to be damaged or, you know, torn or, you know, something happening to it. So that's one of the reasons why we look at the boundaries. When you look at the boundaries, what two muscles, so here you have, you know, the medial boundary here, lateral boundary here, what would be supralateral? What would be forming the supralateral boundary? Biceps femoris. You have to say femoris. Biceps femoris. Supramedial? Semitendinosis. And so membranosus, semitendinosus, but more membranosus as it is posterior. And infralateral, medial, and infralateral, what do you have infralateral here? Lateral head. You have to say lateral head of the gastrocnemius, medial head of the gastrocnemius, and that's boundaries and contents. Contents, what would you find in the popliteal fossa? You have not dissected the popliteal fossa yet, have you? No, you're doing it this Friday, aren't you? Yeah, you must. Okay, you've done the posterior thigh, haven't you? Yeah, so now all you have to do is just walk right down, you know, and right down to the popliteal fossa, and then you can, you know, move to the posterior, you know, or anterior leg, whichever is in the receptor. Condensed. You just go to the condensed. What do you see there? What do you have there? Condensed. Just figure it out. Even without looking, you can figure out what structures we have that you already know. Popliteal, artery and peripheral vein and the sciatic. This you may not know. You know the popliteal artery and the popliteal vein that you already know. And then this you may not know. The sciatic nerve with its two branches, because the sciatic nerve, you know, comes right here and divides into tibial and common fibula. Sciatic nerve with its two branches. Its two branches are your tibial and your common fibular or common peroneal. Fibular or peroneal, you know, it's the same. Okay? And then there's another thing that you see here. You have the small saphenous vein coming in, so it is also included as a structure, as one of the contents. Small saphenous vein. Now remember, we have looked at the great saphenous vein in the anterior compartment. You know, when we looked at the thigh, you have the great saphenous vein. So here we have a small saphenous vein. This small saphenous vein is also known as the short saphenous vein, the small saphenous vein. So it's just like the other one. So the great the small saphenous vein is coming to go, to join up. Why is it coming here into the popliteal fossa? What do you think it will be joining? What structure is it going to join up with? The popliteal vein, the popliteal vein. So it's joining up the popliteal vein. Now, what other nerve from the diagram that you have looked at? It's not shown here. But what other nerve do you think you would expect to see from looking at the lower extremity cutaneous nerves? What other nerve would you expect to see coming this far down? Posterior cutaneous nerve of the thigh. Thank you. Posterior cutaneous nerve of the thigh. Posterior cutaneous nerve of the thigh is also a condensed, right there. And then, what did I miss? You have to correct me now. What did I miss in terms of condensed? What did I miss? Lymph nodes. Here you have lymph nodes. And what type of lymph nodes do you have? The popliteal fossa lymph nodes, what type would you find there? Deep and anything else? Yes or no? Because remember, sometimes they mislead you guys. Eh? So, deep he said, and I agree, I buy it. Anything else? Yes, superficial also. Superficial, some of them are, I told you. This is to make sure that you have the information is confirmed in your mind, okay? So for confirmation, I ask you yes or no questions. So here you have superficial as well as deep lymph nodes and some fat. Radhika contributed some fat to the popliteal fossa. Fat is also there. Those are all the contents. So normal contents. So you should not feel any bump or any lump or anything there in the popliteal fossa. But as we go to look at the clinical conditions, you will find that there are bumps and lumps and all kinds of things we're going to look at. And also, this diagram is a good diagram to look at. When you observe these diagrams, don't just look at it, gaze at it. Just gaze at it. Like you've never seen anything like that. Gaze at it, you get that information in your head. Look at this, gaze at it, what do you see here? You can really see the small saphenous vein coming from the lateral aspect of the dorsal venous arch, traveling up, gathering other small veins, tributaries, coming and joining up the popliteal vein. So when you get all that information by gazing at it, you don't have to memorize the small saphenous vein joining the popliteal vein. You don't have to do that, memorization. What does a weak or absent popliteal pulse indicate to you? what will, if you take, in living anatomy, you will be taking the popliteal pulse. Okay? And so if somebody has, somebody's popliteal pulse is weak or absent, what do you think it is due to? Obstruction in the femoral or in the popliteal. You're taking in the popliteal, so it has to be obstruction in the femoral artery. Obstruction, you know, in the femoral artery. What can obstruct at this stage of your preparation, what do you expect to obstruct the femoral artery? What did you say? Hernia? I would say it can be a blood clot, even in an artery, you could have, but usually blood clot is in the veins. Usually blood hernia of the intestine, femoral triangle hernia compressing the, it can happen, compressing femoral hernia or inguinal hernia, compressing the femoral artery. So in that case, the pulse could be weak. Okay. So that is. Let me see. I will have. Let me see after this one. Okay. Good. Let's see here. Clinical notes. Great. We can spend time on that. There's plenty of clinical notes. Clinical notes. I hope you will read the blue boxes also. Now, always think, when you are examining an injured knee, always think of the three C's. And what are those three C's? Are the C's candies or C? three C's. Look at them. It's a very easy way of keeping it. Cartilages, cruciates, collaterals. See how easy it is. Cartilages, cruciates, collaterals. What do I mean by that? When you are a physician, when you are in the clinic or in the free clinic or wherever, or when you're practicing medicine, somebody comes to you with some knee problem, please don't forget to examine the cartilages. That means, you know, what cartilage am I talking about? The menisci, semilunar, they are semilunar cartilages or, you know, articular discs. They are articular discs or semilunar cartilages. Or so they are, you know, the articular cartilages, cruciates. And the posterior cruciate ligaments, that means, you know, your hyperextension, hyperflexion, you know, if the person has any of those are lost. And then collaterals. Collateral ligaments. I did not go over the collaterals. I don't remember doing them per se. Okay, let me do the collateral ligaments. I know there are two, medial and lateral. Where do they take origin from? Where do they insert? The medial collateral, from where does it come? Medial epicondyle of the femur. Medial collateral ligament, I must have missed it on the outline, I'm sorry you guys. Let's go and look at the collaterals here. I'll come back to the, okay, here. Look at the lateral collateral, medial collateral. Yeah, I mentioned them, but I did not go over them per se. Collateral ligaments, lateral coming from the lateral epicondyle, and look at it, insert into the head of the fibula. Medial collateral coming from medial epicondyle of the femur, inserting to the upper part of the tibia, immediately below, and partly to the medial condyle, but also immediately below the medial condyle. And what is their normal function? The normal function, what normal function do you expect for the collaterals to do? Prevent abnormal side-to-side movement. prevent abnormal side-to-side movement. So think of the cross, not cross-country, downhill skiing, like that. Downhill skiing, and so think of the downhill skiing when you think of the collateral ligaments. Collateral ligaments, lateral. Now, the other thing is, collateral ligaments are known by two different names, medial collateral or tibial collateral. Lateral collateral, or what would you call it? Fibular collateral. Lateral collateral or fibular collateral.
Medial collateral or tibial collateral.
Okay, so now from where to where they flow and come and their function you have. Yes. Up or down? This is the insertion. This is the insertion that means down below. Distal attachment? Oh, I thought you were asking. Okay. Tibia is, you know, the medial epicondyle of the femur and two, the medial condyle of the tibia as well as below the medial condyle of the tibia. That means the upper part of the tibia and the medial tibial condyle and upper part of the tibia. Okay? Okay, and you got their normal function. Now, so the collateral ligaments, so you have to examine, you can really, impress even an orthopedic surgeon when you proceed to examine the three C's of the injured knee. And then he will or she will ask you, where did you have an anatomy training? In Bastyr University. Very proudly you can say, first year. And so here, as you look at, you can be very proud graduates of this university. You're getting excellent training as far as I'm concerned. So regarding the part, I told you during the retreat and orientation, I speak my mind. I told you. And so I spoke. Now, and so here, as you look at here, torn cartilages, regarding the cartilages, okay, menisci, torn cartilages, okay. When you look at torn, you know, cartilages, you already know which one you are going to, which one, you know, what you call damages more often, that you already know. But if you have a torn cartilage, what can happen? What can happen? What would your patient, do or show? What will be the result of a torn cartilage? Pain, swelling. That's good. Pain, swelling. Anything else? Yeah, the movement will be limited. Movement, normal movements will be limited. Pain and swelling and normal movements will be limited. Okay? And so that is, you know, something, you know, that you can, you know, keep in mind that will be limited. And then, which one? Medial, you know, meniscus, you know that is torn more often. Regarding the cruciate ligaments, torn cruciates. Okay. And you may know which one tears more often than the other one. Yeah, medial collateral. Okay, and then how does it happen? Twisting of the collaterals. You know, that is one of the ways. And other clinical conditions, bursitis. You may know the definition of bursitis. And if you do, what is bursitis? Inflammation of the bursa. And then, housemaid's knee, which bursa is affected. That means inflammation of which bursa is known as the housemaid's knee. As you look at it here, the pre-patellar bursa. Because there are several bursae, remember 12 or 15 bursae are there, And so when you look at the pre-patellar bursa, it is a subcutaneous bursa. And so here, you look at the bursa here, pre-patellar. So this is a pre-patellar bursa, subcutaneous bursa. It allows, you know, the skin, you know, to move freely over, you know, the patella here. And so, but if it gets, you know, inflamed or infected or whatever, then, you know, you would call that the housemaid's knee, because people going on hands and knees, you know, for scrubbing the floors and all that, from there it came, the housemaid's knee. And then we also have others here. Baker's cyst, or the popliteal cyst. Baker's cyst or the popliteal, you know, cyst. What is it? Pericake? Is that the one, or what is Baker's cyst? What is happening in Baker's cyst? Blue boxes talks about the Baker's cyst or the popliteal cyst, and that popliteal cyst, you know, you can see protrusion of the synovial membrane to the popliteal fossa. Protrusion of the synovial membrane to the popliteal fossa. But it's not just any protrusion. It will have fluid in it. It will have fluid in it. So the Baker's cyst or the popliteal cyst will be soft, fluid, like a fluid-filled, you know, a little finger of a balloon or something like that in the popliteal fossa. That is the popliteal cyst. And roofers, tilers, or clergyman's knee. This is how it is known in the blue boxes also, when you look at it. Roofers, tilers, and clergyman's knee. That means which bursae do you think are affected? And from the name, you can try to figure out. Clergymen, what do the clergy do? The priest and the clergy, what do they do? They pray. How do they pray? They are very, you know, reverent people. So what do? They bend down, they kneel down. Okay, genuflecting, you know, they're kneeling down. So because of then these, you know, this one here, subcutaneous infrapatellar bursa. Subcutaneous infrapatellar bursa. That will be inflamed more often in these groups of people. That means roofers, tilers, because they go on their hands and knees to do the thing on the roof of the house, and the clergymen, you know, and so that is why these are called the roofers and tilers and the clergymen and all those, you know, knees. They are called. And then other things you can expect is rupture of the quadriceps tendon. Rupture of the quadriceps tendon. If you may think this is not possible, these things don't happen, it can happen. From force, you know, violent forces, you can have torn or ruptured quadriceps, you know, tendon, you know, here. That can happen from direct force also. And the other, you know, you see a knee reflex or knee jerk reflex, which when you are testing the patellar reflex or the knee jerk reflex, what spinal roots are you testing? What spinal roots do you think you will be testing? The viability of which spinal roots do you think you will be testing? Yeah, I didn't hear. L2 and L3 and L4. L2, L3, and L4 spinal cord segments. Why do you think, by hitting the patellar ligament, by hitting the patellar ligament, why do you think you can test the L2, L3, L4 spinal nerve or the spinal cord segments? What is the reason for, you know, doing that? What information do you expect to see? By hitting the knee, you know, here and seeing a reflex action there, how do you know? Yeah, Charles.
Because the moral nerve, it's mental, or am I, or it comes to
Exactly. So because you are stretching. So when you are hitting, you know, this, you know, patellar ligament here, so the femoral nerve at 2, 3, 4 is innervating the quadriceps extensor muscles. And so if that is the case, all these structures here are also receiving or conducting sensory impulses from here. And so that means when you are stretching, you know, this ligament or this tendon here, you are stimulating the sensory impulses are taken from here, from your hip on, you know, this tendon or this ligament here. So you're stretching and you're stimulating the sensory information from here is connected via and to the spinal cord segments L2, 3, 4 because the reflex centers, the spinal cord has some reflex centers. And so these you are testing the viability of the L2, 3, 4 segments of the spinal cord by doing or by testing the knee-jerk reflex or the patellar reflex. Now, the other day we talked about what is called the lumbar plexus and the sacral plexus. Now, we are not going to be doing the complete lumbar plexus and the sacral plexus, but I believe at this time, if we don't go over the lumbar plexus and the sacral plexus as we go along talking about some of the nerves, you may kind of be lost. You may not know from where they are coming and from where they are going. So we have few minutes left, lumbar plexus of nerves. And also I'd like you to know that the lumbar plexus of nerves is going to be done again, and we will do the sacral plexus again. Okay, so here, let's go here and see the lumbar plexus. What spinal roots form the lumbar plexus? Here we have the lumbar plexus. What spinal roots form? Lumbar plexus is formed by the dash of the dash spinal nerves. So what dash should we fill in here for the first dash? The ventral primary rami. The ventral primary rami. So the first dash is the ventral primary rami. Here. Ventral primary rami of which spinal nerves? This is the lumbar plexus. This is the lumbar plexus. And so here, yeah, L1, L2, L3, L4. And so here you have L1, L2, L3, L4. So the second blank here is to be filled with L1, L2, L3, and L4. So that is the spinal roots or the spinal nerves forming the lumbar plexus. You may find that you may think L5 is there and I say, oh, it's here and there and no. Anybody and everybody can tell some places you may find that, oh, I thought it is L4. No. L1, L2, L3, L4. Period. Ventral primary rami of these four spinal nerves is giving rise to a plexus here in the abdomen. I thought that's magic. And so that is the lumbar, you know, plexus. And that means when I go over some of these things, I can ask you these on tests and exams and things because I've gone over it in class. And so here is the lumbar plexus. And what are the main branches of the lumbar plexus that you've already seen? Femoral, obturator, and anything else? Lateral femoral cutaneous nerve of the thigh. You have seen that also here, about here. Lateral femoral cutaneous nerve of the thigh. Okay? And for the time being, we will leave the lumbar plexus with those. Then we'll come to the sacral plexus. And the sacral plexus of nerves is formed by the same thing, ventral primary rami of what? Of what? Ventral primary rami of what? L4 and L5, S1, S2, S3, and S4. Good, thanks. So here, sacral plexus, ventral primary rami of L4 to S4. Okay, of the spinal nerve. I should have put the L4 to S4 here. And what major branches of the sacral plexus have we talked about and what we have seen in this section? What branches are we talking about? The sciatic nerve. And you will be pretty soon seeing the tibial branch of the sciatic, and you will be seeing the common peroneal or the common fibular branch of the sciatic, and also superior gluteal nerve, inferior gluteal nerve, both are also branches of your the sacral plexus. Okay, we will do the sacral plexus again, you know, sometime. But for the time being, so you know, these are branches of. Okay, questions? Yeah.
I think you missed about
cruciate ligament. Clinical something or.
I think you passed over the clinical part of the cruciate.
Did I pass over the clinical part of the cruciate ligaments? Okay. So let me come over here. Rufus, Dyrus, Baker's, Cyst, and all those, okay? So we have gone over that. Let me see here, okay? Let me. Cruciate ligaments, torn cruciates. Okay. Torn cruciates, which cruciate ligament tears more often than the others? And which one? Cruciate. Which one? Anterior. The anterior cruciate tears more often. And with the torn cruciate ligament, what other structures do you expect to be torn? Anterior cruciate, with the anterior cruciate, medial meniscus. And the medial collateral ligament. Okay? Suppose you have the meniscus. If you have a torn piece of meniscus in the joint, how would you know that it is there? It gets stuck, but the movement will be limited. Yeah, cruciates, I'd like you to also add the cruciates. Remember why anterior cruciate is torn more often, why the medial meniscus and all those. Remember the force that can come from the lateral side, and you know, when, because of its attachment, it's not able to move. Any other questions? You need a summarization of the knee joint? No. with the summarization of the lower limb, the hip joint, you got enough. So you figured you don't want another marathon going like that. Alright, you guys. So Thursday, I didn't get that sheet, where you want the case study or not. So because some people will keep quiet, and that after the decision is made, they will come and tell me, oh, you know, I don't want the case study. Then I will say, hey, why didn't you sign so we could make a decision? Okay, that's why I want to know your opinion by signing. Thursday I will do the leg and the ankle joint. The leg and ankle joint, please review the bones and the stuff. Huh? Does it have a party? 3 o'clock? 3 o'clock? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Friday is definitely yours. Okay, guys, thank you.
All right.